And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, extrasensory synchronicity. Mm-hmm. What does COG, SSP, and UFO all have in common? We're going to find out tonight before this 90 minutes of the special report is over. And we're going deep tonight with you on the continuity of government, COG, Deep State October Surprise. It's a very important episode with everything that's been going on politically, because as we watched the debate unfurl there earlier this week, and it was a very interesting debate, actually got a lot out of it, regardless of the ABC hankering. One of the interesting things I think that came out of that was the figure that was not on the stage, but was definitely represented, was the continuity of government commander. And I'm going to get into exactly how that works and how Kamala calling out the torture boss himself, Dick Cheney, as her supporter, was a direct reference, along with Liz Cheney's endorsement of Kamala Harris, of that COG group looking to block out President Trump from ever getting near that Oval Office again with his deep knowledge. And they don't want anything near that kind of competition. And we're going to find out why tonight as well. There's a lot of good highlights from the debate. For me, I want to tell you this, which is, you know, the debate really highlighted how scripted and phony Kamala was, in my opinion. And there were some people who in the media who were like, Trump appeared angry and all that kind of stuff. I think, there's kind of a method to Trump's madness, and sometimes it pays off big and sometimes it just has a kind of a marginal effect, but it is Trump the disruptor. And I think what he was doing was getting around by being so spontaneous. He was getting around. So when they would ask about one thing, he would go to a different thing. And this is the way that he kind of has mastered debates in the past. And the only thing I think, that was a missed opportunity was talking more about the economy, because he has a lot to brag about there. And she has a terrible record in addition to, you know, all of her kind of Marxist leanings and all the rest and the terrible record of the Biden administration. Trump really has a great financial record, economic record to contrast with that. But what he did over and over again is he hit the immigration bell and the whole deal about the wall, which is perfect, actually. That's the other huge strength he has going into this. And make no mistake, going into this fall election, we need President Trump to win. We're going to be looking at a very deep precipice for the country. And I don't mind saying that, because, you know, you try not to be overtly political when you do a show. But in this case, this is a very different situation where there's a group in there that's looking to flood the country so that we lose the actual foundations and the core of America, and they're able to make it one of their financial zones. So they've decided, I have a lot of interesting things about the person who authored the torture memo for the Bush administration just came out and endorsed Kamala. I mean, this is very interesting that all the Bush neocons are coming out behind her camp. So the mask is falling, and the neocons are showing themselves. And so, you know, we hear a lot of things, and I've mentioned this before, about the black pill crowd saying, oh, the presidential election doesn't matter and they're both the same and all the rest. Well, the results would be very, very different if you get a Harris administration. I think a lot of those people, who are like, oh, I don't like J.D. Vance because of Bitcoin or one of these things. Look, that is small potatoes. And I will tell you, very small. Look, Trump has Bobby on his side. He's done incredible with getting the endorsements from Gabbard. Bobby and Gabbard are now joining up to represent Trump at events. The latest one is coming up in Arizona. So we're looking at an incredible coming together of the best people on the left, the right, and in the middle. And they're all landing in that Trump campaign. And this is a race to go over the top on the November 5th election. This group has to win. The Bobby, Trump, Gabbard, Shanahan, the whole bit, this whole end of things has to show up on the winning side. And the Harris-Waltz nightmare with, you know, the whole Stepford-Biden terrible record and destruction of the country and that whole commie push to get everyone under this mandate, you know, whether it was vaccines or digital IDs or whatever, that whole group needs to be shoved out. There's only one way to do that. We're going to find out how that goes into November 5th and how the continuity of government players play a role, one, in the election, and two, in the aftermath of the election, in that crucial period between when the candidate becomes president-elect and then the inauguration of president. We're going to get into that tonight as well. I want to remind you, especially if you're new here, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter, and it helps us stay in touch and get around this ridiculous and heavy, heavy censorship we've been facing. And basically, it only takes a minute to sign up. And what you'll get is a newsletter once a week letting you know about the amazing documentaries that we have coming up for you. Of course, we have the Craze in the Hot Zone Hacking Atlantis documentary available for you now free. And it's very interesting because we did an episode last week, and little did the listeners and the viewers know that there's something in that episode that is going to explode the entire story of the Hot Zone. And it is buried right in that episode. And there's a major documentary piece we're putting forward on this coming up. I'm going to film it later in September, but this thing is going to blow the whole thing off of that. And of course, Wise Guys in the Hot Zone, there are a lot of, you know, the whole Castro, Kennedy, Cuba thing has many more dimensions than what we've seen historically. And so we've put these things on the record, and you're going to be seeing all about that. So if you're in the newsletter list, you're going to get all that information first. You're going to know about the incredible interviews we have coming up for you this fall, along with amazing X-series episodes to blow your mind, all in that newsletter. Stand up and be counted. Go to darkjournalist.com today. We're also going to be taking your questions in part two of this program. We're going to go about 90 minutes with you here tonight in this special report. Miss Olivia, before I go any further, what do you got?
Scarlet Fire says, during the debate, my cat threw up.
That's great.
Says it all.
There are great things about the cat. Look, this is, you know, there's some very viable things about what was going on with that. And it can be taken over the top in both directions. You know, oh, how dare they even say it, or going over the top with it. However, look, if you throw cultures into America that are so different, and you just, you know, there's no program for them. You know, they used to plan immigration. And so they would say, you know, we'll train these people to do this thing. You know, we'll train them in manufacturing. We'll train them in farming, whatever it would happen to be. And, you know, you have all kinds of different levels for it. You have engineers at the very top, and, you know, you'd have all these different levels to integrate them into the economy. But just throwing people in here, we saw with the disaster of what happened when you just threw Muslim groups from Syria and other places that had nothing to do with European culture and just jammed them into Sweden, you got incredible crime rates and all these other things and clash of civilizations. It's not good for anybody. It's not helpful to the immigrants. And to let them in illegally, of course, as a betrayal of the Constitution, and, you know, it's preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Part of that is providing for national security. So if you open the border up and let 20 million people in to collapse your system, then somebody is monkeying with your country. And so the people who are allowing that are traitors to the country. I mean, you can't get around that. And so we have to take that issue for what it is and get rid of all the lofty political rhetoric around it. And at the same time, we have a very robust program of immigration in this country. There's no question about it. And that's what built the country. But even in the best of times, you know, they stopped immigration from 1924 to 1965 because they felt there were possibilities for a kind of balkanization of things. And they decided, hey, let's let these groups all get to work with each other. And it made tremendous sense. And then, interestingly enough, that policy was reversed in 65 under LBJ. And what happened generally with it, it had ups and downs with how it was manipulated. But a lot of it was really about cheap labor and things of this nature. Drugs were the other thing about opening up the border. This is the other problem they have with the wall that Trump put in the first term and wants to really make complete in all along that open border on the south. And there are great advantages to that whole approach, but the problem is it interferes with a lot of the CIA drug trafficking, and this is another problem they have with him. So if they can just call him a racist for wanting it, then it's very easy for them to continue all the different things that they do. And there are many levels to what they can do with these immigrants. They're on overdrive because they're on a very fast schedule to bring down the United States. There's no question about it. Anyone studying it will understand that. We can ask why, for sure, but there are groups dedicated to this. And I think when you hear, I just want to mention this, that there are a lot of comments out this week from people like Bill Gates and others talking about AI and talking about the different functions it can take over. And we've heard this from everyone from BlackRock to other groups coming out and saying, you know, we're not going to need as many people. And if you lower the population and increase the productivity, you're going to have better economies. And so they're just coming out with it now. You know, it's becoming more and more apparent. I want to mention this, though, because I thought Gates and his statement had such gall to it. And it ties in exactly to this emergency powers piece we're getting into tonight, because tonight's going to be all about what is COG? What do we know about it? And we've done shows on it, of course. You know, we've put it into the lexicon on a more broad basis. The person, the real foundation of exposing this, in my opinion, is Professor Peter Dale Scott, UC Berkeley, has been on the show many times. And it's his work I recommend everyone go to if they want to learn about COG. But we do our best to integrate the COG with that whole picture that we get into here in the X series. And that includes the advanced technology, the UFO file, and other pieces. So the deep state, you know, piece weaves in and out of that. This is what Gates had to say. Gates calls for digital ID systems and behaviors to combat misinformation. It's one of the most ridiculous things in the world because, you know, misinformation, again, is in the eye of the beholder. If the government doesn't like it, it becomes misinformation. Or they discovered a new term called malinformation, right? So they'll use malinformation if something is true, but it doesn't suit their purposes. And so here's the quote. This is Gates. The U.S. is a tough one because we have the notion of the First Amendment. I love that. It's a notion, right? People didn't fight and die for it and get away from England and engage in revolutionary wars. But it's just some notion of the freedom of speech. My God, what the peasants are taking back their freedom. And so what are the exceptions? I do think over time you're going to want to be in an environment where people are able to identify who we're looking at. So what he's doing is he's saying, you know, the digital ID gives us the ability, if somebody says something naughty online, to know exactly who they are. And that is the techno-fascism that we've been worried about. But, you know, the whole quote comes out of a CNET conversation. I highly recommend it there because there's a lot more to it. But that notion, they're trying to float this up now, and it becomes more and more apparent where they're going with this, which is their processes are so advanced that we don't know anything about. And this is part of the problem and part of the schizophrenia in the culture, which is they're so advanced technologically with certain things, and the public is completely out of the loop on it. And this whole thing about AI as well, although it is being unleashed, and so there's a, you know, there's a lot more knowledge about it in the public realm, they've been dealing with it. I have a book on 1969 that mentions it. You know, there are books from 1977, 1983. They're all talking about artificial intelligence. They've studied it. They know how it works. And sure, they get more and more advanced with it. But a lot of the hand-wringing about, oh, what are we going to do? What a moral challenge AI is. They've studied it inside and out, and they've decided how it best suits their purposes. And the they becomes more and more obvious. That it isn't any particular group. It's not any particular nationality. It's not any particular, you know, it's not the Jesuits or something. This group constitutes a collaboration and a coalescence coming together to centralize control, and they are hardly united as an overall group. So they're not monolithic. By any stretch of the imagination. However, they are acting with a very singular purpose right now, which is to dominate humanity with the technology. We're going to get into how COG figures into all that and into this election. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is a special report. Continuity of Government, COG, Deep State, October Surprise. That's another piece of this, which is they've pulled the October Surprise as part of these deep state operations before. What's the October Surprise this time around, and how is COG involved? We'll answer that for you, too. A couple more things that came out of this week, but before I get to that, what do you got there?
Charles Wagner says the country is clearly occupied by an alien force.
Yeah, I think it is. What's interesting is, and I've been really, it's been confusing how a lot of researchers miss the Chinese aspect in this. I called out the Chinese aspect. I found aspects of that invading the Massachusetts government here in Boston. And then we recently had the governor of New York, of course, her, one of her top aides, learned to be a Chinese spy. We had Swalwell in Congress sleeping with Fang Fang and all this kind of stuff. And it just seems to go up and, you know, it gets missed. And then the very same people who tell you that I've been referencing the whole black pill thing about, oh, you know, don't pay attention to the presidential election. It doesn't matter. You know, do things on your own. Well, that's all fine and well. I agree. Try to build as much of a new, better system as you can. But you're in the middle of all these things. And these people totally bypass the Chinese thing. They think if you bring up the fact of Chinese infiltration of the government, that somehow that's politically incorrect, or you're, you know, creating a scapegoat or something like that. Look, Chinese Americans, you know, don't want anything to do with China, all right? Because China is a repressive society. By and large, Chinese Americans are much happier to be here and have an incredible contribution to our society here. So it's nothing to do with race at all. When you're pinpointing these different interests, you get beyond all that. Just like when you're looking at Chinese, Russian, or German interests, whatever it would happen to be. So the fact that this gets labeled, you know, oh, they're trying to blame it all on the Chinese, you know, the Chinese have been engaged for a long, long time, going all the way back to before Nixon, and trying to infiltrate this government. There's no question about it. And they got particularly good at it in the past 20 years. And, you know, so many of our companies have been able to grow by going over there with the cheap labor. And the American consumer has had a certain amount of advantages as a result of this. Prices have gone down on things. If you look at a catalog of TVs and radios and things from the 70s and 80s, you'll find the prices are very high for that period of time. And all those prices came down dramatically. You know, you get a flat screen TV for $100. That's all because of part of this. So there have been economic benefits. The problem is the amount of infiltration into the system that we get from that. And what you want to do is be aware of it, screen it, and boot it out of your government. Otherwise, you get another government usurping yours. And we've seen all kinds of signs of that, all sorts of violations of the Constitution. How else do you get to it? How else do you expose it without dealing with it honestly, you know? And if anything, you know, Chinese Americans will thank you for calling it out, because they don't like that repressive system either. And the other thing that also goes for the heavy New World Order dumping illegal immigrants into the country. That is a border war that we're losing, and they are shoving people into this country. The people
gang
who are
members.
Yeah, gang criminals. Members, criminals, all kinds of things. And so those people who came here and, you know, from other countries and built things up here, it's very important, whether they're from the Middle East or from Haiti or whatever, you know, the Haitian population is one of the most religious, spiritual populations that you can get. And I've got all kinds of sources all around the hot zone. And my sources in Haiti tell me you can't, you know, part of the thing that happens there is if you are in America and you go back to Haiti to visit your relatives, they give you directives that between the airport and your house, the chances are you're going to get kidnapped, held for ransom, so they can get something from your family on the chance that you might have enough money to pay off these gangs, and that the gangs are now running Haiti. Well, the Haitian president, you know, they had their own deep state operation there on the American side, and the Haitian president got assassinated a few years ago. You've had this strong man in there ever since. And so they've let things deteriorate and you hear all these kind of wild stories. I hear, you know, stories that would blow your mind in relation to the hot zone. But so there's a lot of reasons why that whole wave is happening with Haiti. It's because we've allowed it to become like this. But so the whole idea, I think, is to be straight up about America and its immigration policy. America does want to welcome a number of different groups, different nationalities and cultures into America. They've always had an incredible, we've always had an incredible policy like this. But what they've been doing is totally different, and it's designed to implode the system. That's also a part of creating emergency conditions, and that's where we go to COG tonight. But I think it is important. Now, back to a few things about the Harris piece. All right, before we get to the King Torture himself, Dick Cheney, Bush official behind torture memos calls Trump threat to the rule of law. All the Bushies are behind Kamala, it seems. Alberto Gonzalez, who served as White House counsel and attorney general in the George W. Bush administration, threw his support behind Vice President Kamala Harris in the Politico magazine op-ed published Thursday morning. Though I'm a Republican, I've decided to support Kamala Harris for president, Gonzalez wrote. Power is intoxicating, and based on Trump's rhetoric and conduct, it appears unlikely he would respect the power of the presidency in all instances. Right. So, you know, here we have those neocons realizing, God, if Trump gets in there, they're going to pull us out of Ukraine, you know, all the wars in Europe that we could have, the fulfillment of this incredible military design. Forget it. You're going to get this guy out. Everybody's on board. What's interesting is the deaf ear that they have politically, because Dick Cheney, I would say, is the least popular politician anywhere. I can't think of a less popular politician. Can you? Mm-hmm. I think he's pretty much the pits. So to get his endorsement, pretty much probably peel 4 or 5 points off your total, in fact. But Kamala goes into every rally now and everything else touting this, and she's really into it. But now remember, when we're looking at Cheney, we're going to find out tonight, he's the cornerstone of COG, along with his daughter, Liz Cheney. That is a whole COG cornerstone. So for those people to be getting behind Harris lets you know where the COG apparatus stands. Former VP Dick Cheney supports Kamala Harris. Trump tried to steal the last election using lies. Sounds like 2000 all over again, doesn't it? Cheney, of course, broke so many laws when he was in office and after the fact that he didn't get called up on that and escaped, and that, you know, the whole thing that they thought when Obama got in is he might prosecute Cheney, but of course it never happened. Another kind of what I think will be seen as a crucial moment in this election is Joe Biden putting on the MAGA hat a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. This is extraordinary, actually, because it's in a weird way, it's a diss to Harris on one hand, and it's also a strange kind of thumbs up to Trump, who after all said, hey, they stole it from Biden by throwing Harris in there. So let me tell you, as someone who's watched elections closely for a number of years, that's very, very unusual activity. And there's another photo of him walking up Air Force One carrying a MAGA hat. I mean, this is strange. Make no mistake.
There are strange, ironic little gifts, you know, that we have to hold on to.
No question. Tidbit, as Jim Mars would say. All right, here's another one. Liz Cheney says Dick Cheney will vote for Kamala Harris, and she will support Democrat Colin Allred in the Texas Senate race. So it's all Democrats all the time. Here come the Cheneys, COG Cheney, wanting to get Kamala Harris in. The question is why? Why do Republicans hate Trump? And this is where the black pill argument falls apart. That's like, oh, the parties don't matter and all the rest of it. No, the Democrats hate Trump and the never Trumpers in the Republican Party hate him. You gotta parse through and figure out what's the deal there.
Or profiteering.
Yes, there's a whole structure here around Trump and his presidency. You have to go back to the first term. You have to go back to the Space Force. You have to go back to the general transparency of Trump. Now, remember, this isn't to say that everything about Trump is hunky-dory. It is to say he is by far a better choice and a more constitutional choice in this election. But I want to get into some of the reasons why now you see this incredible move against Trump, not only, of course, from the Democrats, where you'd expect it. And there's a lot of things that are going on in this election that are just, you know, the normal thing. I noticed there's a lot of people freaking out about Taylor Swift and stuff. Look, none of that stuff is going to mean anything. Of course, they're going to get behind the Democrat ticket. And politicians always use celebrities to try to, it doesn't really translate into any votes. Look, I found this. This is from 1984. It's Michael Jackson with Ronald Reagan. Okay. This kind of thing's been going on a long time. You know, there's no reason to try to get into the head of Taylor Swift and like figure out what deep state faction. She's just, you know, a kind of a flunky musician dropped into the rest of all this as an entertainer and getting attention on it. And they've used everyone from Lady Gaga. Now, there's a whole entertainment network that is supposed to create a norm around just loving the Democrats and everything else. You know, Trump is terrible, like Colbert and all that stuff. I see that as much more sinister propaganda, you know, whereas something like the Taylor Swift thing is just flimsy if you get right down to it. All right. Now, something very important happened the other day, Miss Olivia.
Okay.
And it was completely missed everywhere. But it had to do with our friend Stepford Biden. Stepford Biden signed the notice on the continuation of the national emergency under COG. And this is the White House press release here, September 9th. And it's got Biden's signature on it. I'm going to read it, and then we're going to get into what this represents. Consistent with Section 203D of the National Emergencies Act, 50 U.S.C. 1622D, I am continuing for 1 year the national emergency previously declared on September 14th, 2001. Now, remember, this is the Bush administration, September 14th, 2001, calling for a complete national emergency, which gives them emergency powers. Emergency powers implicit in that, warrantless wiretaps, all kinds of things. And the proclamation gives them COG power, which is the continuity of government power, which is what do you do in an emergency situation? You have the ability to call in COG. Because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency declared on September 14th, 2001, and the powers and authorities adopted to deal with that emergency must continue in effect beyond September 14th, 2024. Therefore, I'm continuing in effect for an additional year. The national emergency that was declared September 14th, 2001. So you in America, me in America, Miss Olivia in America, we are all under what? We're under September 11th emergency powers based on the terrorist attack that took down the Twin Towers and all the rest of it. And as we know from the many investigations after the fact, that was nothing like what they portrayed it as. It was another one of these deep events, very much like the JFK assassination and other things we've studied here on this program, and put forward the fact that these deep events happen and they come from this other system. And that's a covert system operating outside of the government. They step into the government, they create a policy change, and they step back out, and we're left looking at all the rubble, trying to figure out where the fingerprints are. And September 11th, certainly, which we just had the 23rd anniversary here, when you think about that last Wednesday, and Trump, you'll notice, was at that with Vice President candidate J.D. Vance, and Harris and Biden were there. And you had Michael Bloomberg right in the middle of them. Now, that's an interesting photo op, though, I will say, and I'll get into why as we get along here. I'm continuing in effect for an additional year the national emergency that was declared September 14th, 2001, with respect to the terrorist threat. This notice shall be published in the Federal Register and please transmit to Congress. That's the White House, Joseph R. Biden Jr., President, September 9th, 2024. So the September 11th National Emergencies Act gives them all kinds of abilities to act under emergency, like we were still under attack. This is very interesting because we've gotten very deep into emergency powers on this program and just how much weight that has. I'm going to take some time here in this report to give us the background on that. I'm going to use some quotes from Professor Scott and others, but I'm going to show how the emergency powers and how the emergency communications network, sometimes called the Doomsday Network, is involved in all of these events where they need to do something outside of the Constitution completely illegally and have it stick and make a policy change here in America. We're going to get into that tonight. This is the Continuity of Government Special Report, The Dark Journalist Show, DCOG Deep State October Surprise. We'll tell you what that surprise is too and how October surprises have been used in the past. We're going to take your questions in the final 30 minutes of the show, and we'll go about another hour with you here tonight. Before I go any further, what do you got?
Najat Madri, interesting timing with the command from the U.S. to Ukraine to launch long-range missiles into Russia. Nuclear war equals emergency situation.
There's no question. You know, I've been looking at that, and I saw Putin's response and the absolutely reckless behavior on behalf of the Biden administration. And, you know, we've had this question about who's really running the show, because we know it isn't Stepford Biden, but somebody is positioning us to assist Ukraine to strike deep into the Russian heartland, which is a terrible escalation. And what the Russians are saying, there's two questions there I think it's important to look at. The Russians are saying, look, one, you couldn't reach targets. If you're just Ukraine, you could not reach targets deep inside Russia without help from the United States. So you're involving the United States directly. That's one. Two, they're talking about using United States long-range missiles. If we do that, we're engaged in the war. According to Putin, he says he'll consider that an act of war. And the fact is, we should be assisting them in a peace process. We should not be engaging them to try to take on Russia in their own territory. It's insane. It is complete, irresponsible and inconceivable action. And it's a kind of a nuclear meltdown of the soul, as it were. But these people are facing the fact that come November, they may be out of business. And it's probably only COG that can keep them in power. I have looked and studied over the past 4 weeks at the actual presidential polls, not the flimsy things you see going up and down on ABC News. And they show very substantial odds that President Trump is going to win the election. Now, it's not going to be a cakewalk, and it comes down to every last vote. There's no question. But this is a game of electoral votes. There's no question. One of the big things that Trump got, and why everyone should really be paying attention to this, is that Bobby has joined forces. This is dramatic. And this is the thing that needed to happen. Both those sides coming in and getting rid of the Biden-Harris regime. This action of Bobby Kennedy coming on board, and then after Labor Day coming even more strongly on board, talking about MAGA and talking about why President Trump should be in office. This alliance is the core alliance of the 2024 election. Everyone, in my opinion, on the independent media side should get behind this ticket. This thing will lead you to a completely different America. It's not perfect, but these are the people that we need. You couldn't ask for a better duo at this time in history. And, when we look at the alternative of Harris-Waltz, you have to ask yourself, especially the people in the media space who are trying to make the perfect to the enemy of the good, by saying, well, you know, I don't like so-and-so for Bitcoin or, you know, whatever it happens to be, or for some minor policy that's not the larger picture, you have to ask yourself, especially if you're an influencer and your words and your reports have some impact, aside from your own vote, but how are you going to feel when you wake up on November 5th, and, at the end of the day, they announced that Kamala Harris is the president. really ask yourself, and then think about the betrayal to your own audience for that, you know, all because you had some idea of perfection about what a presidential candidate should be. And so-and-so had one connection that you didn't like, you know, you've got Bobby Kennedy merged with Trump in this election. Could you ask for anything better than that in this cycle? You could not. And by the way, this is Trump's last term. That's one term to get a number of things right. And then 2028 comes up. Who's in a fantastic position to run as an independent and probably be able to implement a lot more is Bobby Kennedy. So this is a fantastic opportunity. If we go down the slippery slope of losing the election to Harris Waltz, you'll get instant crackdown on speech. Freedom of speech will basically go away. Look what they're doing in England. There were a number of people there in the midst of their own migrant crisis. By the way, they're the snapshot of where we're heading because they did it there first. And what did they do? They try to criminalize people who were going online and saying, hey, I don't want this, you know, invasion of these migrants. You're flooding our resources. What are you doing? Well, they're taking those people who've made those comments online, and they're having these little Poindexter cops and legal authorities in the UK prosecuting these people. And then also threatening people over here saying, we're going to extradite you. It's not going to happen, Poindexter, but it's how these little Nazis think. So we're going to have to get real about that. That's what you're going to face with Harris Waltz. This is not a, oh, it doesn't matter. And, you know, don't worry about the presidential race. It's all a reality show. You just, you know, think about how to help your local councilman or something. Look, local political work is great, but you have a political body. And the president is the head. He is the titular head of the entire thing. It's an incredibly powerful position, and you need the president, and you need the president to get it right. So if you don't have that, and you're, you know, spreading out this thing and giving people this kind of black cloud that, oh, it doesn't matter who you vote for, none of that stuff matters, it's actually incredibly irresponsible. I can't tell you how irresponsible it is in this race after seeing what the plans are for this group on the Democrat side and what they want to implement. I cannot stress enough that under the circumstances, the Trump-Bobby alliance is a miracle that America needs. And those guys, you know, if they fall, it's going to be hell to pay in America. I can tell you that right now. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. COG, we're going to get into COG now. This is the Deep State October Surprise Special Report. And before I go any further, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Sacred Force says, DJ, do you feel there are two COG teams at work, like a Nazi banker WEF UN aligned one and a Space Force Naval Intelligence US military one?
Well, I think the COG group is dominated by a kind of a lineage that goes back to some explosion over the UFO file in the 1940s. Now I'm going to get into that because I have a whole little piece on Thomas Mantell. And of course, Dr. Farrell did some very interesting research about Thomas Mantell and the whole incident. And he, of course, was the pilot who went down after chasing a UFO. What I found in the reports is that before he lost contact, he was describing that he could see what looked like humanoids inside of the ship that he was tracking. So there's something very, very important about the Mantell shoot down that took place, because after all, when his plane went down, he was in the process of tracking a UFO. And a lot of interesting things happened there, but you can really get the picture, and I'm going to pull those, kind of connect those dots for you here tonight. You can really get the picture from the UFO file secrecy and the explosion and the need for that right in the midst of creating this continuity of government underground structure. So those two things go hand in hand. So what did I start with tonight? I said COG, UFO, and SSP. What do they have in common? That's what we're going to get into. That's the key. So let's do a little timeline here. I'm going to show you something that'll put us in the right frame of mind. And I promise that we're going to swing here from 1959 to 2024 very seamlessly because of the nature of the topic. Now, this is a series. It is actually President Eisenhower's schedule from 1959 going into 1960. and it runs from December to March. I pulled out these back-to-back meetings, which I found absolutely fascinating because they tell the story just by the headings themselves. Are you ready? December 10th, 1959. Eisenhower meeting. Antarctica, intercontinental ballistic missiles. December 16th. Continuity of government, COG, nuclear defense, export controls. January 12th, USSR, space policy. January 14th, Cuba, Dominican Republic, classification, Iraq. January 21st, defense policy, now we're into 1960. February 4th, 1960, arms control, Cyprus. February 18th, scientific military assistance, Italy. March 10th, Cuba, Libya. March 17th, Cuba, West Indies. March 24th, nuclear weapons, nuclear testing, Cuba, Iraq. If you can clearly see there, the connection in the topics at the top are very important, because what they show is that the same meetings that were taking on Antarctica and ICBMs are also talking continuity of government. Antarctica is in that discussion. That's very important. Keep that in mind. After all, it is under Eisenhower and his great programs for creating the highway system in the United States that we get the ability to do all the underground bunkers and all the development for COG. However, the system and the communication system and the groups operating there start to really become a force in the 1950s. And they're able, by the time President Kennedy is assassinated, to be heavily participating in that. And so they have formed a kind of a parallel covert government against the overt public government. And there are very interesting traces for that that come from Peter Dale Scott's work. Kennedy inherits, of course, this piece from Eisenhower, but he is at odds with his own CIA, who see him directly as somebody who does not want to, he's not very easy to do a snow job on, and he is asking the questions. And of course, when Dulles tries to get him into a war in Cuba, on two occasions, but in particular during the Bay of Pigs, that gives him the ability. And as the conversation goes, he calls up Alan Dulles and has him come in. And he says, if this were the UK, I'd have to go, but this is the United States of America and you have to go. And that whole apparatus that had built so much up World War II, the Nazi underground pacts, all the different things that they had done, is getting thrown out ostensibly by the Kennedy administration. So along with Dulles, they're taking Richard Bissell, deeply connected to the UFO file, Charles Cabell, his deputy at the CIA, whose brother plays a very major role in the Kennedy assassination as the mayor, who will help set up the route and be in the motorcade. What's interesting to me is the COG personnel involved. And this is what intrigued me so much about Professor Scott's work in the first place, which is that when he was studying COG, he felt like he didn't have a lot of resources to go on. And he over and over again says, we actually don't know very much about COG, do we? And there's a complete lack of oversight on the congressional side because of the hyper secrecy around it. And the great excuse, of course, over and over again is national security. Well, it's very interesting because in the process of setting all this up, there's a character that shows up. There's two characters in the Kennedy assassination that show up that are directly connected to this apparatus of COG. And then as Scott went along, of course, he found the COG people also connected deeply. John Dean in Watergate, Iran-Contra, Oliver North, George Bush. It seemed like these people over and over again had this connection to this emergency planning piece. So that got his attention. And that's what's so fascinating, I think, about his work. As we take that and we try to step into this kind of outlook on things and go deep, we can see immediately that when you get into the Kennedy assassination and you have Secret Service people who are using these, the Doomsday Network during the heart of the assassination, you can see that they are taking risks right in the middle of the situation in order to accomplish things. So they're going to a great deal of trouble to eliminate Kennedy. Then, you know, all the questions about why get raised. And we get a lot of foolishness about things like, oh, the mafia and all the rest of it. But here's what to ask yourself as a country. Why, almost 61 years later now, do you still not have the records from the JFK assassination? There is a crucial aspect sitting in what remains of those records. And interestingly enough, just recently, a Democrat congressman has said, I want to start a congressional hearing to try to open the records. Well, a wonderful moment occurred when Bobby came forward and endorsed President Trump at that great event in Arizona. They both got together and stood there, and President Trump pledged to release the rest of the Kennedy assassination files, which he was heavily prevented from doing in his first term. This is crucial, and it's going to come into a major piece of what we're looking at here tonight, because there were aspects involved in the Kennedy assassination that show up directly related to COG, and one of them is a character named Jack Crichton. Very interesting background on Crichton, which is he was involved with an Army intelligence unit that ran a COG civil defense branch in Dallas. He was such a key factor, and he was such a well-known sort of CEO of an oil company in Dallas and everything else, that he was called upon by authorities to get the translator for Marina Oswald so she could spill her guts about Lee. And in fact, one of the things that Scott points out about what happens there is the translator skews all these things. So you get all this wrong information out of what Marina is saying because that translator is taking her out of context. To the point where, you know, originally what they had is that the Oswald rifle supposedly that, you know, had been used there, the Mannlicher Kirkano, came from his travels in Russia. You know, this is how bad the translation is this Crichton is getting. But the whole idea of needing to shape the testimony, he's right in the heart of it. Well, a little more digging on Crichton is very interesting, because what you're going to find out is that he went to college with the person who would become the mayor of Dallas. And that whole piece about the Dallas mayor being the brother of Charles Cabell, and then also going to school with Crichton, is quite fascinating. And it's George de Morenschildt who works for Crichton. So we have a whole piece there directly connecting the key players in the assassination to the continuity of government group. I'm going to read just a little bit about Crichton here directly from a lecture from Professor Scott called Common Denominator for Structural Deep Events, Project Doomsday and COG, which is a crucial lecture if you can get it. I believe they include it as chapter 12 in American Deep State, which is an excellent book. Harder to get, by the way. I saw a copy now for $135. But I think you can get it cheaper. And I remember when it first came out, I was talking to the professor and I was telling him none of the bookstores up here are carrying it. And we were calling the bookstores, getting them to make sure it was stocked. A couple of quick things here about Crichton, and then we're going to do a little leapfrogging through some COG personnel. How does that sound? Okay. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show, COG Deep State October Surprise. The October surprise is particularly interesting in this case. Okay, from Scott. The doomsday planning can be traced back to 1963, when Jack Crichton, head of the 488th Army Intelligence Reserve Unit of Dallas, was part of it in his capacity as Chief of Intelligence for Dallas Civil Defense, which worked out of an underground emergency operating center. Because it was intended for continuity of government operations during an attack, the center was fully equipped with communications equipment. A speech given at the dedication of the center in 1961 supplies further details. This is like a branch of COG that's sitting in this kind of civil planning in Dallas. The Emergency Operating Center in Dallas is part of the national plan to link federal, state, and local government agencies in a communications network from which rescue operations can be directed in time of local or national emergency. It's a vital part of the national, state, and local operational survival plan. Crichton, in other words, was also part of what became known in the 1980s as the Doomsday Project. Like James McCord, the Watergate burglar, who's also part of COG, Oliver North, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney after him. In 1988, the aim of the Doomsday Project was significantly enlarged, no longer to prepare for just an atomic attack, but now to plan for the effective suspension of the American Constitution in the face of any emergency. The Russians have hacked our voting machines. The UFO threat is upon us. Lou Elizondo is on CBS News telling us about a UFO threat. And I have a few things to say about old Lou tonight as well, the folk, the kind of fake CIA UFO threat promoter who now they're rolling out for the 50th time, another disaster in the making, but that Chris Mellon money is just flowing into the space, baby, and so they keep it going. It is clear from the Office of Emergency Preparedness that it supplies a common denominator for key personnel in virtually all of the structural events, Watergate, Iran-Contra, 9/11, etc. In addition to the individuals discussed here, the OEP itself was involved in generating these events, but I believe that the alternative communications network housed first in the OEP, Office of Emergency Preparedness, and then later part of Project 908, played a significant role in at least three of the major deep events, JFK assassination, Iran-Contra, and 9/11. It's easiest to show in the case of 9/11 when it is conceded that the continuity of government plans of the Doomsday Project were implemented by Cheney on 9/11. Well, who just gave Kamala Harris her great big endorsement? Dick Cheney and his spawn there, Liz Cheney. They're both behind her all the way, hanging out in their weird bunker in Wyoming, right? And Wyoming's a lovely state. It's too bad the Cheneys have to be there. But this is very interesting because when you see the reach of COG and you see that it's a missing link in history, on dramatically, even on the best researchers, missing this crucial element. And sometimes, you know, you see in different networks, people getting caught up with different things and they'll say, you know, well, Epstein, he's controlled by Mossad spies and they're getting sex blackmail and all the rest of it. This is a whole corridor of thing that's going on in one place over here for influence. The reach of COG is so much deeper than, you know, a flunky like Epstein, who was very deep. But the reach of COG is much bigger in significance to any of these types of characters. As a matter of fact, I would think that a character like Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell, is on such a level so far above Epstein that this is where the perception goes off when people are looking at different things. And I think something goes on also in alternative media where the salacious thing gets thrown out there hardcore and it gets distracting in a sense. And there's a lot to be learned about the Epstein networks. Of course, there's a lot about Epstein in the hot zone as well as we've learned in this program. But what I want to point out, and the reason I'm bringing that up is the depth of the reach of COG and how it operates is quite interesting because it's a super secret program, very much like the UFO file. What was it that we got from Robert Sarbarker, the top physicist who worked with the UFO file? He said publicly that the UFO file was listed in secrecy higher than nuclear weapons. So when you're preparing COG then, and you're preparing originally for a nuclear exchange and all the rest of it, part of COG planning must be also in relation to the UFO file. There's no way to get around it. So you're dealing here with levels and corridors of secrecy that are so far beyond our public life that it's very hard for us to get a handle on it thinking wise. However, it's crucial that we do, because two things happened last year which changed the dynamic on this. One of them was that the current, at the time, the then current leader of NORAD, NORTHCOM, COG combatant commander, Van Herk, came forward during all the shoot down of the balloons and all the rest of it and talked about them shooting down UFOs. So you didn't have Biden having that conversation. You didn't have, you know, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. You think that would be his place? No. They had the COG commander talking about this. It put things in a different realm. That was the test balloon. That's why we're in a different place on all this. And one of the things I want to point out is that the perfect kind of example for this is when they do, the scientists, a group of scientists get together around the world, and depending on what's going on, for example, the situation we're having with Russia right now, they'll move what they call the doomsday clock another minute closer to midnight, and it'll go back and forth. They'll take it down a few minutes, and then they'll move it up a few minutes. And there's no question that the UFO threat / COG emergency takeover moved like this closer to midnight when all of that took place in February of 2023. So we're in a different paradigm already. And that's why 2023 was so weird with the whistleblowers coming out in Congress and all the rest of it. Congress is going to do another hearing. And I think that there's a whole promotion thing behind the scenes of Mellon trying to get the CIA stooge Elizondo in front of Congress. We'll get into that. But what I want to point out is that we're in a different paradigm with this. And I've been on the record before that I think they could pull the UFO threat as the reason to get COG going. It could be a nuclear event as well, though, because now they're talking very loosely about exchanging nuclear weapons, tactical nuclear weapons with the Russians, which is insane. It's beyond crazy. These are the same people who are talking about, you know, global warming and, you know, you can't have gas in your car, and they want to exchange nuclear weapons all of a sudden. So, you know, just beyond crazy, beyond insane. However, in the middle of all this, we have to take a look and say, what would they activate COG with for? Who are the personnel who are in charge of COG now? That's what we're going to get to next. And it's going to open some very interesting eyes around this whole situation. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Continuity of Government, COG, Deep State, October Surprise. Yes, this swings wildly back between the 1940s, 50s, and the 2020s. We're going deep with you here. We're going to take your questions coming up here in about another 20 minutes. And we'll probably go another 40 minutes here with you before I go any further. Miss Olivia Europe.
Fuber Fighter says a lot of these structural events oddly seem to be destructive. CC says UFO or asteroid disaster and a market crash to gain even more power. Red Cap Goblin says, when is the false flag? And Deborah Sinico says, do you believe that we will even have an election?
Well, that's the interesting thing on the last one is if they think that they can get the outcome that they want, the question is when would they call in COG? And is COG part of the October surprise? I think what they're looking at for the October surprise is making her president before her time. That is, Biden steps down and she steps in and she's actually the president, swinging the role of the president into the election, and that'll be kind of a spur of votes somewhere. Part of the analysis on the presidential race that I find so interesting, and my COG I think is even involved, is that the chances of getting Kamala in a fair fight as president are very low. One, she doesn't play well with voters. Two, she has a terrible record to defend under the Biden-Harris administration. The most disastrous military situations in the world were at war in the Middle East, war, proxy war with Ukraine and Russia. And they put us in a perilous situation. They've opened up and demolished the southern border. They've had our country overrun with all these different groups from all these different places. And they are causing chaos crime is rising and all the rest. That's just for starters. So what happens is it plays with the voter over and over again. When they go into that voting situation, they think how bad their life has become. This is where the question came up that was a retake on Ronald Reagan's question, is how he beat Jimmy Carter. He said, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? We all know no one is better off, except for people in the very high echelons of society. But in general, no one is going to answer that question. Your housing costs are higher. You know, food is out of reach. Healthy food is out of reach for many people. And, you know, debt is skyrocketing. All those things, they're very obvious for us. The question is, do they have the ability to take those states that are crucial to the election and flip them? They don't have the ability the way they did in 2020 COVID year, because that's why you see them bussing in all these people to the Kamala rallies. And of course, you know, they're doing kind of rent-a-crowd thing. And I'm sure there are some people who want to be there supporting her, but when they're bussing people in, you know, you don't see that in Trump rallies. People just show up. So that's the real hardcore popularity. But what it tells you, and I think it is a strangely healthy sign that they're doing this, because it tells you that they're not going to be able to win with, you know, standing on crates like they did in 2020 at drive-ins and waving to people, and Obama doing bad jokes and things like that. This is different. They realize that they need to win a lot more on the ground, and that, you know, you can't just do the mail-in voter fraud, that whole thing. So it's a very different dynamic, so it gives us some hope in that sense, the fact that they're doing this. I see those as positive signs. So therefore, when I look at the election, it's very clear to me that Trump has all the issues to win. And with Bobby's support, remember, Bobby was polling around 15% himself. And most of those votes are going to go now to Trump. So what we're looking at, that alliance is going to be the crucial key to the 2024 election. There's no question in my mind. And people who are going after Bobby and, you know, after his Bitcoin stance, they're so wrongheaded. This is such a terrible time to do it that they really need to check themselves, because, you know, it's insane. Bobby is about the best person dealing not only with COVID, but dealing, working against corporations and working against a lot of the corruption that's come out of all the Monsantos and all the rest of it. So you have a fantastic leader there who's in league with Trump, and Trump seeing his value. So that is the kind of network that you need. So we're in a fantastic position in that sense. So the question is, October surprise. Well, if they make her president, it gives them that much more of an advantage. They already have the presidency, of course, through Biden, but making her the first female president, you know, they feel will spike the female vote and all the rest of it. That's where the October surprise could come in on a lateral political level. The COG aspect, in my opinion, would more likely be triggered in that president-elect period between November 5th and January 20th. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Continuity of Government, COG, Deep State, October Surprise. I want to remind you, before we go any further here, to go to docjournalist.com and to sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter. It keeps us in touch with each other through the ridiculous censorship. And, you know, I love the social media networks. We do everything we can on YouTube. And it's, you know, it's a fantastic platform for reaching everybody, but they incredibly censor the results here, and they don't tell people about the shows. No one gets notifications, you know. There's a lot of problems there. The best way to get around it, the direct pipeline of that newsletter, and it lets you know about the incredible documentaries we have coming up for you, exciting interviews, guests that will blow your mind, X-Series episodes, some of the best X-Series episodes coming up, documentaries. It's all there. Stand up and be counted. Go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for that free newsletter. And before I go any further, Miss Olivia, you're up.
David Termina, DJ, Biden not only put on that MAGA hat, but he also said, quote, I'm an old guy. I can't remember my name. Seems like they may spring the switcheroo really soon.
Well, it's pretty interesting. I think that, oddly enough, I think there is a pride thing there with Biden. And I think that's why you saw the MAGA hat in their face. And I don't think that was a senior moment. I think that was him. Look, these guys have instincts, you know. You don't walk around with a Biden pin if you're Trump, and you don't wear a MAGA hat if you're Biden. So this was really quite remarkable, I would say. And I think you can imagine the horror inside the Harris camp when he was doing that. But they were ruthless with Biden. And Pelosi even publicly said, yeah, you know, we let him know. And so in certain terms, we could do this nice or the hard way. They got rid of him. And, you know, but they knew for years that he was out of touch and couldn't handle the position. So, you know, there's a lot of treachery behind the scenes with the Democrat Party. They need to fail. It's the karma of the situation that the Democrats would fail because they have misused their power. And they've allowed this neocon World Economic Forum global masters thing to come in and try to, you know, basically just devastate the Constitution. The karma of the situation is they need to lose. There's no question about it. And my estimation of the Democrat convention is it was soulless. It had no soul. Whereas the Republican convention had a lot of soul. And that was one half of it. But when Bobby got together with Trump, that moment was, for me, one of the best moments in political history, period. 100%. This is where the action is. And Bobby needs to get out on the campaign trail. You know, they were talking about up in New Hampshire that those are four electoral votes, okay? And they were talking about how it's a dead heat and all the rest, and that there wasn't a whole lot of Trump resources up there. Look, you know, Bobby, his whole network is Boston. Go up there for a week, talk to those voters and swing that state. That's four electoral votes right off the bat. But Bobby can do so much. New Hampshire, Maine, Arizona, Colorado, North Carolina, Georgia. I mean, he really has the history. He's the person that they need to be using in a hardcore fashion right now. And everyone needs to get together around this. And, you know, I've pointed this out that I think that some of the on the alternative research side or some of these bigger names that are coming into independent media space, you know, Tucker Carlson and all the rest of it, there's a kind of superficiality to them on some of these deep subjects and that they're adopting them quickly, almost as marketing techniques. None of that matters. I suspend all my judgment on all of them. Get everybody together to get Trump and Kennedy and Vance over the goal line to become president, because we need the right kind of leadership in this country. Again, the first thing, the top issue in the entire country is to seal the border immediately. You have to do it. Otherwise, you lose the country. There's no question in my mind.
On that note, Adele Bezzy One says, DJ, what are your thoughts on the Rescue the Republic event scheduled for September 29th, Michaelmas?
Yes. Well, you know, you're going to see a lot of things like that popping up. And this is what needs to happen, because part of the problem, you know, you have to engage it on a number of levels. So you have to take the podcast sphere. You have to take television. You have to take everything. And you have to do the live thing and have that live connection when you're going to, you know, it's like the Trump rallies. They have that incredible feel to them because it is that movement of so many, there's so much will and intent in one particular place. And, you know, they've done studies on this before, which is why baseball and football teams do so well, you know, in their home records. And when they go on the road, they don't do so great. It's because of that thought and intent and the purpose going on. That's an incredible current, you know, just bubbling up in the middle of this whole situation. So you need that live connection. So I think you should see more and more events like that as well. I hope that there's going to be a lot more. So we got the impression there, going back to the COG piece, about Crichton and how he was connected to the whole Doomsday Project. Now let's go a little further down with all this. And we're going to talk about a couple of unusual things that happened in history, setting up this pattern again. During Watergate, when Nixon was going to CIA Director Helms, who took over after Dulles and McCone and all that, but who was a deputy of Dulles, and it's very deep in that system. One of the weird things I found out about CIA Director Helms was that he interviewed Hitler in the 1936 Olympics. And there's a couple of guys like that, you know, who are in this system, and somehow they had met, they had this opportunity to meet Hitler. And you almost wonder if there wasn't some afterglow of this exchange. But Helms, Nixon came to him and he said, well, look, there's a lot of things breaking with Watergate. A lot of these guys are connected to that whole Kennedy, you know, thing. And I want to be able to protect the CIA from the whole who shot John angle. This tape just came out, okay, a year and a half ago. So remember, the government is still at war with the Nixon family trying to get tapes that technically belong to Nixon, but the government says belongs to them. It's 50 years later. They're still doing that. And by the way, when the government gets the tapes, they review them and then decide what they want out. So it's not like they want the big transparency either. But it's very important in those tapes that we have now him on the record saying, I'm willing to protect the CIA from the who shot John piece. I just need you to give me the who, what, where about who, what was going on here. And you have all this weird silence and strange kind of canned remarks from Richard Helms saying, I'm here at the service of the president, you know, very sort of flimsy things. He knows he's being recorded. But one of the things when Watergate's starting to get hot and heavy, Nixon sends over his aide, Alderman, over to Helms, and he really lays down the gauntlet, and he says, look, president says, if you don't kind of get the FBI off this and say it was a comedy of errors in relation to Watergate and like E. Howard Hunt getting caught with all this and all the rest, that it's going to open up the whole Bay of Pigs thing. And Haldeman would write in his book, you know, and that the Bay of Pigs thing was Nixon's way of saying the JFK assassination is going to get opened up and it's going to be on you guys, the spotlight. And that Helms, who's a very cool customer and never lost his temper, literally jumped up on his desk, red faced, and said, we had nothing to do with that. Now, this was very important. When you go into what takes place in 72, 73 in relation to Watergate, Nixon fires 500, count them, 500 CIA analysts. That's one. Two, he gets rid of 1,000 CIA contact intermediaries, etc. Fires them all. So he's gotten rid of almost 2,000 CIA operatives there and analysts. So how much of an enemy did Nixon become at that point from the CIA? And by the way, I think that, you know, they loved him. They wanted him in instead of Kennedy in 1960. But there's a certain point at which he thinks he's the president. He's created this opening with China. He's doing all these things that they're looking at him and thinking of him as somebody who is outside of their control. And once he starts firing their people, then they're going into a different direction. And they're looking at him and saying, well, he had this plumber's unit. He wants to replace us. Let's replace him. So the person who is pivotal in the middle of all that, of course, is John Dean, Nixon's lawyer. And, you know, you have the whole confidentiality, lawyer, client confidentiality. It's very strange for the lawyer of the president to be the one who turns in the most damning information. And that's what leads to all the impeachment hearings and the ultimate resignation of Nixon. But if you go into what John Dean was doing just before he got in working with Nixon, he was working for continuity of government. So these players have a way of showing up in history over and over again, coming directly out of this ultra-secret underground government network. Now, the existence of the government network, we don't have to guess at. It's on the record. And it hit such a crescendo in 2020, because they were planning to use COG to get rid of Trump, that they started to openly talk about it. And it was quite fascinating. For me, look, you know, first of all, I've been reading Professor Scott since I was in college, right? Let me tell you, no one ever talked about COG except for Professor Scott. And there was nobody to kind of chat with about. It just was not an issue. So there were things that would happen when you reviewed history. You'd see things like Ollie North and his testimony when he'd be talking and he mentioned continuity of government, and they'd all freak out and say, you can't mention that in congressional session. What are you doing? So it was a real hot button thing. There weren't news stories about it. Suddenly in 2020, hey, meet the COG commander, you know, and Nancy Pelosi saying, hey, I got briefed by continuity of government today, you know. So it was getting very, very strange. And it came to certain conclusions that they actually attempted, instead of doing the election rigging, that they attempted through COG to remove Trump during the COVID scare when he got COVID himself. And this was a period that as soon as it happened, and the election goes down right afterwards, Trump starts firing everybody in sight. This is a very crucial key thing. And during the end of his presidency, he goes in and he's changing many of the emergency rules. This is interesting. And it only gets deeper from there. I want to read a couple of things in relation to this, and then we'll go to your questions, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is Continuity of Government, COG Deep State October Surprise. I just want to wrap one thing on the Nixon side before we get into the rest of this, which is what Professor Scott had to say about him in relation to this. He said about McCord, James McCord, who was one of the Watergate burglars who had just come out of COG, been hired for this plumber's unit where they would go around plugging leaks for the Nixon administration and doing illegal things like breaking into Daniel Ellsberg's psychologist's office and things like that. McCord's participation in an emergency planning system dealing with telecommunications suggests a common denominator in the backgrounds of almost all the deep events we're considering. Oliver North, the Reagan-Bush emergency program's point man on Iran-Contra, was also involved in this planning. He had access to the nation's top secret doomsday communications network. The doomsday network is going to become very important because it is a way to communicate and do all these things, but there's no trace. Even NSA can't trace the call because the emergency network is that secret. North's network, known as Flashboard, excluded other bureaucrats with opposing viewpoints and had its own special worldwide anti-terrorist computer network by which members could communicate exclusively with each other in their collaboration abroad. 51 Flashboard was used by North and his superiors for extremely sensitive operations which had to be concealed. But this doomsday planning can be traced back all the way to 1963 through the figure of Jack Crichton. So just to keep that loop going about how we have McCord and Dean connected with this big event of Watergate, and then you instantly have that overlap with Crichton being part of COG along with Winston Lawson using the COG Doomsday Network during the assassination. COG shows up in all of these crucial events and causes some kind of a policy change. And let's just consider, for example, all the policy changes from JFK and 9/11, just briefly. We just had the 9/11 anniversary. After all, the JFK anniversary is coming up. What do you think happened in terms of policy changing after Kennedy was assassinated? Well, certainly the Vietnam War, instead of removing the what little soldiers that we had there at the time, which Kennedy had planned to have them all out in 1964. Instead, we got this incredible escalation in a war that dragged on and ruined the fabric of American society, introduced a huge drug culture, all kinds of things. And in relation to NASA and other things, all those programs went very, very secret. The next thing that we have to consider is the whole piece about the moon and how that was going to be a joint mission with the Soviets and all the rest. So the whole thaw and the Cold War, all these different policy changes, Kennedy's vision of freedom, all that gets derailed and wiped off the board, and the Dulles team is back in charge. When you go to 9/11, what did we get out of that? Well, first of all, 260,000 strong Homeland Security, including the TSA, which you know, has been known to, in a very unconstitutional fashion, be searching and surveilling everybody. You get this incredibly anti-constitutional apparatus, the Patriot Act, wireless wiretapping, wireless wiretapping warrants, and all the rest. So this is a big problem from a constitutional point of view. You lose the constitutionality of the country. Then the emergency planning. What you lose on September 11th is we're under the September 11th emergency. That allows for the activation of continuity of government. This is the nature that we're of the problem that we're still under, because, as I told you, Biden just signed the continuation of the September 11th emergency 3 days ago. So, you know, historically, you're looking at 23 years there. You're still under that same emergency. It's quite fascinating, you know, during the Nixon administration, they went, and someone in that administration was going through the different things from the Korean War, and they found out, oh, you know, it's weird. None of the presidents, or nobody ever told them, or the intelligence apparatus, or the Joint Chiefs, that they left the Korean War emergency going. So all these strange things could still be going on in the background in a completely clandestine fashion. So in 1971, Nixon flips a switch and the 1950 emergency of the Korean War is finally shut off. But who knows what was going on there? The Korean War ended in 1953. That's 18 years in the middle of this weird emergency powers thing. So you can see where drug running, money laundering, all these types of things are much easier to happen. You know, it's a much easier thing to accomplish if you have these emergency powers in place. Nobody even knew that the Korean War was still, the emergency powers were still going at that point. Yes, Miss Olivia, what do you got?
Matakwe Oyeson says, what is DJ's take on mail-in voting still in effect in many states? Another cheat fest? And Giza Death Star Community says, quite frankly, we need to get real about what to do if Trump Vance lose.
Wow. Or
lose in quotes.
Yeah. Excellent point. We cannot face that situation, which is why I think it's so important for everyone to get behind this ticket. And the crucial thing, you know, if people were on the fence or whatever, the fact that Bobby is in there, Bobby is practically merged into that administration at this point. And the level on which they're dealing with each other and talking to each other, I mean, this is hardcore. So for me, what you're getting is the best that we have to offer in this case, because Trump with Kennedy is an incredible blow to the deep state. In Kennedy's case, they assassinated John F. Kennedy. They assassinated his father, Robert F. Kennedy. And he's called it out. He was the first Kennedy to call that out, which was crucial. He knows the CIA was behind it. He's going to open and help Trump open all that up. Trump, you know, not only does he have the great knowledge from his presidency and Space Force and all the rest of it, but through John Trump has that great knowledge of the UFO file, the Tesla files, and all the rest of it. He's on a different playing field. As we've mentioned many times in this program, his association with Roy Cohn is potent. This is a potent combination, because Roy Cohn was so deep in that structure. For Trump to have absorbed from him the knowledge of where all the bodies were buried for the deep state, is no question the reason why the deep state forces and the political machinery cannot tolerate this man, which is why, one, they've tried to kill him in July. We know there were probably other attempts also, but that was an assassination attempt right before the entire nation, in the whole phony crook story and the incineration, you know, cremation of Crook's body before anyone got a look at it. You know, you're living through deep state history. There's no question about it in my mind. The question is, of course, you know, the legal aspect with Trump, they try to put him in prison as well. They try to bankrupt him through these phony cases. I mean, they've thrown everything at Trump that you can do. And they haven't done that to Bush. You know, they haven't done that to the traditional enemies of Clinton, Bush, back and forth. They had little minor cases. Oh, you know, some kind of a sexual harassment suit where Clinton had to pay up $700,000 for being a creep, right? That's not to the criminality. Think about MENA, Arkansas, and the real criminality that he's associated with Daddy Bush. Yes.
Iron Butterfly 1023 says, so let me get this, see if I got this straight. A Democrat is now endorsing a Republican, and a Republican is endorsing a Democrat.
Yeah, that's about the size of it. And they are the, you know, look, they're all about empire. And what they want is they want the United States of America to be the North American financial zone. They don't care about the Constitution. And, you know, Bill Gates expressed it best. He was like, oh, you know, they have some notion of free speech over there. You know, so you have a lot of sleazeballs like Gates. And the problem is he created half of the infrastructure that we have on the computer end. So all the machines you use, all the software, et cetera, that comes directly from the psychopath. And so therefore, they are plugged in to so many things. But nonetheless, it provides for a certain amount of exposure for them as well. You can't get around that. So their system wasn't foolproof. And I do think that we can have a kind of thing happen in relation to technology, a kind of moral technology movement. And you see hints of people wanting this, something that doesn't track them and all the rest of it. They're really getting sick of that machine. And, you know, so there's a very interesting game going on there. Unfortunately, Gates, with his purchases, not only of nuclear, you know, he's trying to develop nuclear power. That's dangerous. And his purchases of farmland and all the rest of it. I sounded some pretty big alarm bells when he started to go after farmland and was blown off on it, which was hilarious to me because it was nothing more dangerous, in my opinion, than Gates being around farmland or nuclear power. But it's interesting because I think very often the thing that sticks is, you know, a kind of a scandalous thing. And, you know, you got a lot of stories about Bill Gates on Epstein Island and all the rest. And all that's true. And I'm sure that that network operates with him right in the heart of it. But the real payoff, I think, with someone like Gates is what was the creation of Microsoft all about? What were they trying to build with this worldwide network? So I mentioned COG. I've mentioned the UFO file. The SSP aspect, which is the secret space program. And, you know, of course, this got terribly sullied with the whole Gaia TV fantasy stuff. But the real research, which this show and great researchers have been involved with, gets to the heart of the fact that there's a gigantic space infrastructure we've put in place. And the reason we haven't had any moon missions, manned missions into space, to the moon since 1972 has to do with the fact that the public side of this had to go down to practically nothing, you know, space shuttles. And the real dream of space travel that they blew up in 1986 with the Challenger is the last gasp of the Kennedy manned space missions. That, you know, that's the open where the public participates in it. That's where they shot that down. And, so once that was gotten rid of, what did we have instead? You had this kind of very strange thing about, you know, these landers on Mars and some of the unusual and very sporadic things going on in relation to space. It's very important to understand how they flip the rules for continuity of government and they flip them into space. And that's why so much of that infrastructure could be developed without any congressional oversight. And why you get things like SpaceX and all this stuff, and the whole notion of a space president. And remember, if you go all the way back to that Nazi planning when they were dealing with rockets and their own space obsession, the whole concept was to rule things on the ground from space. And so you're getting really into a position to do that now, not to mention their big worship of Mars. And you're going to have to check out Gigi Young on that one because she's got the real dope on that. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is Continuity of Government, COG Deep State October surprise. I'm going to show you some of the COG players, then we'll take your questions, and then we'll wrap it up. Mm-hmm. All right, everyone. All right. Oh, just as a funny little aside. Now, I told you about Lou Elizondo, and we've done so many shows on him and the corrupt TTSA and the CIA infiltration of the UFO file and how they, you know, rolled these people out and Chris Mellon would try to control them and all the rest of it. And one of the guys that they rolled out, Major Grush, he came out and said, you know, I worked for NRO and I saw these things there. I think Grush had a chance maybe to reveal some things, but he got interfered with by the likes of Elizondo and Mellon. Famously, I talked to Grush and it was a very interesting conversation. A lot of good things went on there. But after that, Mellon got him into the system of addressing Wall Street. And, you know, they were like, there's $5 billion in the room, you know. And so, you know, I came out and exposed the fact that Mellon was controlling him because that's what Grush told me. This is a very important little chapter because Mellon himself publicly came after me on this. But that DOD billionaire official sitting in the middle of this, Chris Mellon, of course, we've had his cousin on the show, John Warner, many times on this program exposing what they're up to. And that John doesn't pull any punches. You know, he's the son of Senator Warner and the Mellon heiress, Catherine Mellon. I mean, he, you know, he's not going to take it from Christopher Mellon and their phony UFO threat program. But that whole setup of Chris Mellon and Elizondo and Tom DeLonge, all that stuff that they recycled over and over again, trying to pull off this false UFO threat piece. It's very important time-wise because you have to remember that in 2016, they thought they were getting Hillary Clinton. And when Trump got in there, it upset their false UFO revelation plan. Remember, UFOs are real. CIA UFO threat isn't. And at a certain point, somebody in that structure decided we're going to run with this op anyway, even though Trump is out. And they ran over the cliff with Elizondo and really some of the worst. So now they're trying to roll him back out, but they're going past the UFO community and podcast and thing, and they're launching him into like CBS and, you know, 60 Minutes and all this nonsense. And his book, Imminent, is one of the most pat on the back, fantasy-based, hero worship of himself books I've ever read anywhere. And it's great because this headline really sums it up. Ex-Pentagon official says VA doctor has seen an alien implant. Lou Elizondo, former Pentagon official. They usually say who led the ATIP program, UFO program, secret program by the government to look into UFOs. And he was the leader. Well, the program didn't exist and he wasn't the leader. That's what came out about that. But I thought that this was funny because I said to myself, hello, Art Bell, Coast to Coast AM, Roger Lear, 1997. It's Lou's revelation. There are alien implants. But that whole thing about the UFO file and how they're using it in this way, you're going to see a lot more promotion. There's a lot of money and a lot of intelligence heft behind CIA Elizondo. So, you know, let's keep that in mind when you see congressional hearings and he's like, you know, he's going to be saying, I'm risking my life to bring the UFO threat to the public. You're going to see this and they're going to play it out and they're going to have the backing because of the Mellon money and the pull of the CIA. So just remember before it hits, we know what the real deal is. And there's a very easy formula to apply around UFOs to get to the truth. No CIA. That's the first rule. Okay. No CIA. Let's look at another three-letter piece, the COG commander, General Guillo. I'm going to do this. I'm going to say this, which is that these COG commanders and these people, they're put into the position and they're supposed to think like, you know, they're trained to think like you're going to have to become the big dictator of everything. You know, you're the combatant commander of the United States. If the COG threat button gets pushed, You have to appoint regional governors. We get rid of Congress. You're the cheese. So this is how they're trained to think. And so you can't really fault them for it. It's their job. But so therefore, the actual people, the personnel we're talking about, you know, it's the system is unconstitutional. The COG should not exist in this fashion. It's a whole apparatus, underground government. It's insane. But the personnel that they use are transient, one, and two, are trained to think in this way that, you know, somehow in this position that they're supposed to assume martial law and all the rest of it. So, you know, they're probably good in their training and all the rest of it. It's just, it's a completely unconstitutional and unlawful exercise. So Guillo is interesting for a few reasons. One, he was appointed and they were threatening because his appointment was getting held up for a long time by an Alabama senator named Tuberville. And he was selected by Biden, whereas the previous one had been selected by Trump. Now, this is interesting because the threat that they sent over to Biden was, we'll install this Canadian general if you don't do it, if you don't get him in there somehow, if you don't get Tuberville to let that go. And that's interesting because it lets you know that someone from Canada, and of course, we love the people of Canada. When I say this, I'm talking about the governments. The people are fantastic. And I, you know, I love many things going on in Canada on the people side. The government is terribly repressive. But what's interesting to me is that what was happening there is they came in and they were forcing this issue. So it lets you know that part of this deal that they have going on with COG is they could install someone from a different country, in fact, to run all of the COG machinations. When I found that document from last year, I was shocked. And the threats that they were making that they were going to install this Canadian commander. Because remember, with the COG commander, they have three roles. They are the NORAD commander, one. Two, they're in charge of NORTHCOM, which is a completely illegal entity that's not supposed to be running the United States. This is absurd. That comes directly out of the 9/11 emergency. You know, we created CENTCOM to run the Middle East, you know, and NORTHCOM, they were like, hey, you know, we have all this great time causing wars in the Middle East. We'll just create NORTHCOM to control America. We have a number of rules against this, posse comitatus, for starters. You do not have military martial law rule offshore there waiting to take over. So this is the nature of the actual civilization and situation that we find ourselves in now. So in every one of these COG commanders, the last three in any case, I found very strong UFO file connections to their position. In the case of Van Herk, the previous one, he was from the 509th group, which came directly out of the Roswell lineage. Because Roswell 509th is the one that was the top unit. They were the only ones who were allowed to use atomic weapons. That's how elite that group was. You talk about Jesse Marcel, he was one of the top intelligence officers at the time. And so for him to look at this and say, you know, we're looking at something very different from anything we have. This looks like alien tech. That's quite interesting. As a matter of fact, I have a quote here, which from my many books I was going to read from tonight. Look at this. but this is from Dr. Farrell's book, and it's a quote of Philip Corso's that he highlighted in his very, very interesting book, which I think still reads, although he wrote it a decade ago, Dr. Farrell, his book, Covert Wars and Clash of Civilization, still reads. I mean, the headlines are still catching up to it. Here's the quote from Corso, who, of course, Philip Corso, very, very involved in the Pentagon and in the whole setup of the government on the military side for decades under Eisenhower, Kennedy, and others. quote, it took up until the 1980s, but in the end, we were able to deploy enough of the Strategic Defense Initiative, Star Wars, to achieve the capability of knocking down enemy satellites, killing the electronic guidance systems of incoming enemy warheads, and disabling enemy spacecraft. If we had to pose a threat, it was alien technology that we used, lasers, accelerated particle beam weapons, and aircraft equipped with stealth features. And in the end, we not only outlasted the Soviets and ended the Cold War, but we forced a stalemate with the extraterrestrials, who were not so invulnerable after all. This whole piece is going to play into how we look at these things. And there's a great, you know, Farrell grabbing that quote out there gives us that connection again. Think about that in relation to what we're talking about tonight with COG, et cetera. And then think about how this COG UFO SSP thing all works together. COG is the underground control, but it also can control policy. So they have the ability to come in and cause things like, you know, martial law for total control on the ground. The UFO file aspect is kept so secret because it's our redevelopment of a very advanced technology, but we're also dealing with this other thing. And if you know, an off-world civilization or something advanced here. And then when you go to SSP, what does that do? It gives you the control of things here on the ground, but it gives you the control out there to see what's coming in. And that's exactly what Corso was getting at. Understanding this thread of COG, UFO, and SSP is the key to understanding what's going on in that power structure behind things. Because in earnest, you can't be a president and come out and talk about SSP, UFO, or COG, really. Now, they do get opportunities to talk about the UFO file, but they can't say much, can they? There are indications that they'll give. I think that the more openness we get around the UFO file, the better for the entire, social fabric of the country and for the world, in fact, because we have to remember that as we're engaged in these battles with countries like Russia, et cetera, in proxy wars through Ukraine and all the rest, Russia is so advanced and so developed on that UFO file aspect. And they have so much knowledge about our own programs through spying and through their own intelligence networks that, you know, we're really looking at a situation where the more that this comes up publicly on the UFO side, the more that the public aspect is brought forward, we'll understand the political dynamics behind the geopolitical things going off the Richter scale. Okay, a little more on the current COG personnel. Okay, so our friend General Gio is from Fort MacDill. They had incredible activity at Fort MacDill in Florida. And they say that actually, instead of Homestead being the place where they were keeping alien bodies that both JFK and Nixon viewed, that it was actually MacDill where they were keeping them, and that Homestead was a good cover. So then enter John G. Storms, who is the other. He's the backup NORTHCOM COG commander. He's number two. This guy's very interesting for a lot of reasons, but one of the things I found in his past that was mind-boggling was his association with Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. Now, in December of 2023, December 18th, there were very strange sightings over this base that looked like a group of UFOs, not a single UFO, but maybe a half dozen or so, were flying over this base. And they were getting a lot of sightings and also weird, unusual activity of things going up to check them out, et cetera. This is one of those. This NASA WB-57 is making very nice circles over Langley Air Force Base, especially when you consider that it looks like there may be a 75-knot wind from the southwest. That's the picture. Look at that circle of flights around that Air Force base. This is when all the UFO activity was happening last December over this base. who comes out of this base and then suddenly this summer finds himself the number two man at COG headquarters, our friend John G. Storms. He's number two. You never hear about any of these guys because nobody's really looking at COG, who the officials are. Remember, he is also second in command for NORAD and second in command for NORTHCOM. He's the number two man. So you have Guillo on top and you've got Storms underneath him. Both of them have a very strong footprint on the UFO file, as did their predecessor, Van Herk, who came out of the 509th. There's definitely an overlap between the UFO file and the COG commanders. There's no question about it. And my guess is it goes directly to the heart of the secrecy we're talking about. And with that, Miss Olivia, we're going to go to your questions, which we will take for about 20 minutes here.
Okay. David Termina, DJ, do you think they have the gall to install Kamala, pull some kind of false flag, blame it on Russia, then call an emergency COG suspension of elections, just like Zelensky did in Ukraine?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing with Zelensky. I was like, oh, we're at war. Forget about elections. If you read anything about COG, what they say their mission is to like secure the peace. And don't worry, you know, as soon as we get things back under control, we'll have elections again. No problem. Yeah, sure. Just ask Egypt. Okay. 2011, they had the whole uprising going on there. Has that military commander left? Well, if you do a quick search right now, you're going to find it's the same military commander. They're still under military rule. And where are those elections? Well, Haiti, you know, Haiti, about 4 years ago, the president got assassinated in Haiti. And they were like, we're going to do elections, you know, take it easy, no problems. Oh, we can't do elections. There are gangs all over the street, which is true. By the way, from my sources, even people who want to go to the hospital are afraid to go from their homes to the hospital for fear that they're going to interact with these gangs. Now, what's interesting is you're not allowed to carry any weapons in Haiti. You can't have a gun, but all the gangs are well armed. And according to my sources, the police are honeycombed with gang members. So it's very hard to get the police to crack down on them properly. So Haiti, you know, it's very interesting because so many things in the hot zone tend to ricochet back out to America. So when I was thinking in that debate, they were talking about Springfield, Ohio, and all the things about the pets and all the rest of it. I was like, you know, there's no question that the Haitian part is going to come up in a crucial fashion. They've let it right under the surface. You know, they've let this thing kind of bubble under the surface as a news story. The New York Times and everything else, little tiny blips once in a while. But there's a dramatic situation going on down there. And what's very interesting to me is, you know, the reason you're hearing about this great cultural clash is you don't usually get 20,000 Haitians brought into a small community in Ohio. It doesn't usually happen. And I say that, again, as somebody who respects the Haitian culture and everything else. And I think they do a tremendous job with immigration around Haitians. I think that there's a tremendous Haitian community in America. This thing is weird, though. They're just dumping large amounts of people into these small towns that don't seem to have a whole lot. You know, they're not urban areas. They're not areas that you would assume Haitian groups of immigrants would be able to assimilate. So there's something, you know, this is all rising to the surface now. And I think that that is very clear. In terms of elections here, the more it looks convincingly, and I believe when they look at the real numbers, they know how much she's losing. She is losing. Ever since Bobby threw in, look, everything you hear on the surface is static noise. Bobby had 15%, okay? Trump was beating Biden by at least 5 points, okay? Probably more. You know, Bobby's 15%, most of that's going to Trump. Trump's leading. Okay, not a cakewalk. Every vote counts, but Trump is leading. And the more that they look at it, the more that they're thinking, this is a disaster in the making. And you can see once in a while that their own media, which is doing this big splash around Harris, once in a while, they have little criticisms for her. Have you noticed that? They're not quite sold on their own candidate. Isn't that fascinating? Yes.
Okay, this is really interesting. Grant Connor says, does DJ know that General McPhillips recently canceled the 248th Marine Corps Ball. First time ever in its history. The ball was scheduled for the 16th of November, 2024. What did they know in advance?
Wow. Well, that's very interesting. I haven't heard anything about that, but, you know, I have to tell you that that situation that came up recently with Anthony Blinken and how the Poland officials were like, get out of here. That's an indication that they know that they're not going to be dealing with Blinken in the future, and they don't want to see Poland get into a war with Russia. You know, they've been through all that. And they understand the memories of World War II are very potent. The memories of the Cold War are right there. And you have these people playing games with their lives, you know. And they know that, you know, Ukraine has lost 600,000 soldiers. It's an incredible loss of life for their games, for their war games. So it's a sick situation. What you need to introduce there is a peace process, which they don't have. Stepford Biden does not have a peace process. Program for that. We need to just get those people out and install a new administration of Trump, Bobby, and Vance, and it needs to happen ASAP. And I'll tell you, there's a number of scenarios, but assuming that the scenario goes through that Trump gets in, that target period between the election, November 5th, and the inauguration, January 20th, is key aspect to watch as well for the COG side. I do feel that COG is more active. That's my own observation. So they may be looking at a trial balloon of what it looks like to pull off a cyber terrorist attack and blame it on Russia and say, we can't do the election because it's messing up the Dominion voting machines. You know, I think that these things are more, rather than predictions, they're options on the table that we need to be aware of. Yes.
Bob, do you think it's possible that Trump initiated COG and devolution in December 2020? I looked at Chris Miller's appointment as Secretary of Defense and other appointments as a sign that explains why Biden seems to be powerless.
No, I mean, Trump got out of office. There's no question about that. And I think people who were looking at it didn't understand the rules of how COG works. And they were saying, well, maybe Trump is still president. No, but I think what he was doing was he realized that he'd been bamboozled and that they were going to use COG on him during that October. And so that when the election went down and they used these other techniques in order to install Biden, he wanted to look. And that's why you got guys like Miller and others, too, that we pointed out there. He wanted to look at the activation of NSAM 57, which was a Kennedy directive given to the Pentagon that basically got the CIA out of the paramilitary business and put all the paramilitary activity back to the Joint Chiefs. And the Joint Chiefs were basically afraid to engage the CIA on this. They didn't want to take them on. And so Kennedy had come back to it a couple of times. So it's a series of presidential directives. This is not up for debate. They're there at the Kennedy Library. I've read them many times. NSAM 55, 56, but particularly 57. And it gives the Joint Chiefs the ability to take back all the power from the Central Intelligence Agency. And it turns the Central Intelligence Agency back into what Truman originally created it as. And what it was originally created for, which was to gather intelligence to show to the president. So it became an arm, a tactical arm, under the umbrella of OPC, which was developed at the same time, and it overshadowed. The CIA was supposed to take that OPC thing and tamp it down because those people were doing wild things overseas. And, you know, they were interfering with elections. They were doing all kinds of things on their own. So they're getting outside of the control. Truman blows the whistle on them and says, get OPC under control, put it under CIA. And those people who were those operators for OPC, in the history is heavy on it. They slowly took over this apparatus of the CIA so that you're dealing with this different thing. And that Kennedy saw the essential problem was they have the ability to do paramilitary interference in these other countries. That's where their power is coming from. He probably knew something also about the deep drug trade that was going on. Look, his father knew about the illegal alcohol trade coming in from all these different places and, you know, being divvied up in the hot zone and then brought into America. You think Kennedy didn't know about the drug networks? So he knew what the CIA was doing. I think what he was trying to do was say, how can I defang them and still have their basic directives fulfilled under national security? So he was going to throw it back. And remember, he created his own intelligence network with the DIA, which when he got out of office, got infiltrated with a lot of CIA people. But he was trying to create something that was a military-based intelligence thing because he felt that the one that had got outside of the military, remember the CIA is largely a creation of Sullivan and Cromwell. And there, you know, you're dealing with Manhattan and international finance after all. And that group is doing international finance with Nazis and all the rest of it. So they're dealing with Nazi money. And those are the connections of many of those people. The lawyer at Sullivan Cromwell, after all, is Dulles. So you're dealing with a lot of that upper crust lawyer interface. That's where Professor Scott gets so much of the deep state from, and where I think, you know, we see things upside down. I don't like to criticize other researchers, but I've mentioned this about some of Whitney Webb's work, which is, and I, because I have people coming back to me all the time being like, wow, the organized crime is blackmailing the CIA. You know, it just doesn't work that way. CIA, the organized crime factions work for the CIA. The CIA tells them what to do. And if you look at how Professor Scott lays out the deep state, you have to get the order of things pretty well. You've got organized crime on this kind of foundation layer. You've got the intelligence networks above them. And then you have the contracting networks of the intelligence agencies like Booz Allen Hamilton. Those guys are doing operations completely outside of the rule of law. And, you know, the more ops that they find to do, the more their billing hours go up. So that kind of surveillance and thing. And then, as Scott tells it, the next layer has to do with mega finance, you know, so what we'd call, we could look at BlackRock and some of those companies. He was referring at the time to oil companies and extreme levels of wealth, and then the management of that wealth. So there's a good kind of consolidation of how the deep state work. It's not some mobster international guys blackmailing a bunch of intelligence people to do God knows what, and the government is under siege of the mob or something. You know, the government has absorbed the mob. You have to understand when we're dealing with the crime aspect that we've worked in the country. If you look at the CIA aspect, they've worked deeply with the mob in places like Italy and other places to prevent communists from coming in. So in their mind, they had their own justifications for doing this. But there's all kinds of things about organized crime that I think are important to this, but you have to get the levels of it correct, I would say. And so I hear that getting spun around a lot. Yes.
Scarmoge. So is DJ arguing that COG is now the covert arm of the three-letter agencies?
Well, what happens is, no, because you have a lot of the three-letter arms and the three-letter agencies working in COG. You have private citizens that are well-connected who are outside of government working in COG. As a matter of fact, that's how you got COG in the first place. People like Cheney and Rumsfeld weren't even in government at the time. They had been in, but they were out. And so the development of COG, and this goes back to Eisenhower, who wanted it to represent a wide array of society, and he brought in the president of CBS to be one of the key players in COG. a lot of the things we hear about COG, even the fact that it's housed in Mount Weather and stuff, probably false, because everything about it is subterfuge. And I understand that because of its essential function. The problem is that it's become so extra constitutional and so large and affects our society so much, but it has so little oversight, almost none. So as a group, it's too powerful. And so therefore, you know, COG, when you look at it, you can think of it, it's not just a bunch of military people hanging around. It literally consists of wealthy private citizens, heavy duty military people, diplomats, scientists. I mean, it is a group that represents a mass of the society. And the ultimate thing with COG, remember, when they were created, was they have to be able to rebuild civilization after a nuclear exchange and run a separate government. That part is all well and good, but it doesn't explain the other aspects of the secrecy, which is why when I was speaking earlier, I brought in things around Mantell and the UFO file, because it reminds me, I'll read a little thing about Mantell, because I think it's a crucial little UFO aspect to tie this in. And I guess the next time I talk about COG, I'll mention the UFO aspect a little bit deeper. Let's think back to this case. It's a very important case. The Mantell incident was reported by newspapers around the nation and received significant press attention. It circulated about the crash. Now, he was tracking this object that was moving at incredible speeds, and it was going up. And it was going so fast and so far up that when he was trying to keep up with it, the idea is that his oxygen failed. But people who were watching on the ground noticed something very unusual, which is they said, one, that it looked like it was in some kind of array, that it was being, you know, that there was a field of energy, like an energy ray being laid on it, and that it basically disintegrated in midair and then fell straight down. So it wasn't a normal plane crash by any stretch of the imagination. And the official explanation at the time of what he was chasing was Venus. Okay, let me tell you something about Mantell when you go into his past. He's part of the Normandy landings, okay? He's flown in World War II under very dangerous conditions, has very high accommodations. He's not mistaking the planet Venus for a craft flying at 50,000 feet. And it's interesting, in 1952, Project Blue Book identified the object Mantell pursued as a skyhook balloon. So they were really good at balloon excuses in that period of time. What's interesting is people saw at a certain point the thing he was chasing, and it was a long, oblong, metallic object. And at a certain point, there are differing accounts, but they say that basically it fired something blue or some kind of a green ray at his plane, and the plane disintegrated. So we see the wreckage after the fact, and it's a very unusual case, but I think it tells us a great deal, because what are they going to do with that death, and if they have more like it? You see, COG gets incredibly active around this period, and it's suspiciously close to when they're covering up the UFO file. For me, I think there's a combination of the two secrecy factors that drives this over the roof, because we have the COG nuclear exchange secrecy layered with the UFO file secrecy. That's why it came to be such an out-of-hand agency. Yes. Take two more questions.
Oh, God, I have so many questions.
No, that's good. That's
People
good.
People are desperate.
There's only more coming.
Butterfly Effect Group, what in your opinion are the likely events planned for the October surprise? Everybody's afraid of this October surprise. It's universal. And what plan does the deep state, Wendy Eater, what plan does the deep state have as a response to the threat of the loss of the world reserve currency status of the U.S. dollar?
Well, it's interesting, because one of the moves that they're doing on just the traditional political side is they're pressuring the Fed to lower interest rates next week. Now, you can't do that. There's a period of time in the 1992 election, if you go back to it, when Bush is pressuring Alan Greenspan to do the same thing at the Fed, and all the newspapers are coming out and rightly saying, you can't do that. It's election interference. Because if you create artificially these conditions temporarily for things to be better for a few weeks, because you lower the interest rates and, you know, people are able to invest, then you change the dynamics going on. And one of the interesting October surprises from times past was that incredible hurricane that hit New Jersey during the Romney-Obama. Now, I do think in the Romney-Obama matchup, you wouldn't have gotten much different. They were both very much the same. So that argument that the black pillars apply to this election would have worked in 2012. It doesn't work in 2024. But this is very interesting because Obama went there a few days before the election and toured the wreckage with Chris Christie, who was a Republican governor, and it made him look like a grand guy. What could Mitt Romney do, right? So those are the types of things that they'll pull out of their hat at the last minute with this. This is a tight election, and the, I was going to say the Oprah side, the Harris side is losing, and they realize the potential for loss is great because she's not a great candidate. You know, and she has a lot of things to overcome. So I think it's the level of severity of what they're going to pull. And there's no question that the escalation of the war between Ukraine and Russia and the warnings that we're getting from Putin about, hey, I'll take that as an act of war if you let them strike deep into Russia because you're helping them so much. You know, we can't engage Russia on a nuclear basis over Ukraine. It's not in the country's interest. Whoever is giving that command is not providing for the Constitution of the national defense. So we can't let that happen. So the only outcome I can see is that we install new leadership, and we have the traditional means to do it, and we have the momentum to do it. And with Bobby and Trump aligned, I believe you can get it to happen. Yes.
What do you got? Okay. So
everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. This is Continuity of Government, an X series special, COG Deep State, October surprise. We're taking your questions. We'll take a couple more. I want to remind you, if this is your first time, if you're, you know, it's one of the kind of, especially if you're new around here, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter if you haven't already. That is a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch and it lets you know about the incredible shows, documentaries, live events. It's all there in the newsletter. So make sure that you stand up and be counted and get on board. Yes, Ms. Olivia,
okay,
we've got two more.
This question from myself. Yeah. David Termina, DJ, with so much on the line in this election, do you think Trump, as a former president, can or should make some kind of disclosure about the UFO file now during the election cycle?
I've said from the beginning that both Bobby and Trump should bring this issue up. They have tons of openings to do it. It's only on the plus side. You know, it gives them the transparency mantle, and both of their families have been deeply involved in the UFO file. We know it. We've put it on the record. So, you know, there's no question that they should. Now, I think that Trump is looking for a way to just, you know, keep the momentum going and not go off in any wild direction. So I don't expect to see it. However, I've always said that the UFO file can actually help them in this election. No question about it. I wanted to mention this before we wind down the show. And it's been great to be here with you for the special report with the Ideas Room. Of course, there's some wonderful memes going around with Trump and the cat. I love that one. But I wanted to mention this, which is Washington Post, when they were talking, you know, there was a wave in 2020, as I mentioned, about continuity of government. Suddenly, the press decided, hey, you know, the media said, it's okay, we can talk about it now, because they were planning to make it happen and they didn't want to have it freak everyone out if it went down. So the Washington Post ran this thing and they go, five myths about continuity of government. No, it's not just about protecting the president, which is weird anyway. So that was the article. There's a couple of interesting sort of pieces of gold in this article. Check this out. Many conspiracy theories do have a nugget of truth at the center, and this one is no exception. Through much of the Cold War, certain plans existed. The Attorney General was always accompanied by his own version of the president's nuclear football, known as the emergency briefcase. It contained, among other documents, plans for an emergency detention program to round up foreign diplomats and certain other foreigners, as well as draft documents ready to be filled in an ad-lib style during an emergency known as the master arrest warrant and the master search warrant, which allowed arrests and searches of dangerous people, quote unquote. And for years during the Cold War, the Bureau of Prisons did keep six prison facilities on standby, including renovated World War II prisoner of war camps in Florence, Arizona, and El Reno, Oklahoma, ready to receive thousands of people on J. Edgar Hoover's security index of suspected communists and other enemies of the state who would be rounded up during the time of war. Now, this is very interesting. One of the key things, one of the key changes to COG that took place in the 80s was to create a massive dissidents list. Now, they're talking, they're referencing this here in the 1960s. They had a master arrest list. So the Cheney-Bush gang improved upon this and created a whole list of dissidents that they would round up in the event of a national emergency. And this list survived through the 80s into the 90s, and then after 9/11 got a big boost. And so this thing is floating around there on the COG side, and they knew who to get and who to silence right off the bat. So as soon as they call COG, by the way, this is, you know, this is their plan on the theoretical side. I'm not saying that they're going to call COG. And, you know, I think that they'll be outed for doing anything like that. But the possibility exists, so we have to talk about it. But as soon as they call COG, what they do is the stand-up General Guillo, who's the leader of NORAD, NORTHCOM, and the COG combatant commander of the United States. And he says, okay, that's the end of Congress. There's no Congress. I'm in charge. Here are the military leaders, the regional governors that you'll get. So the East Coast, you know, you get New York, Boston, Baltimore, all these places, DC, and they'll get one regional commander, and you have all these different commanders. And then he's in charge of allocating all this stuff and resources and all the rest of it. Now, the next thing that they do is they implement this other piece. So that's what COG is all about. You can see it's a whole martial law plan. And the idea of it just sitting out there without us having more knowledge about who has the oversight on it, who really controls it, what's been the background on it, and the fact that it's been pointed out by researchers like Scott that some of the really deep operators in these other deep events have all come out of this COG group has to give us pause about who it is that's operating in there and what their goals are. So, and how they can be used as a tool when part of the problem is that these leaders, including people like Trudeau and stuff, who came out in favor of sending missiles into Ukraine from Ukraine to Russia, you know, these guys are out there. They cannot get enough for leading a coalition. You know, Biden's numbers were down in the 30s. Trudeau is like 29% approval rating or something like that. So the attractiveness of the emergency powers, as we pointed out on this program before, is something very attractive to them. Miss Olivia, you're up.
Wally Tango Foxtrot, can't have a zombie apocalypse without real zombies, explains the Haitian imports.
True.
It is kind of true. Butterfly Effect Group, DJ, isn't that constitutionally illegal to install someone from Canada?
Yeah, this is the thing. That's why I thought that this was, that's one of the most remarkable things that they were doing there, which was threatening Biden if he couldn't put some pressure on Tuberville to allow our friend Guillo in as the three-time commander, that they were going to just install this Canadian, you know, which would ostensibly put this person from a different country in charge of the entire United States in the event of an emergency. So, you know, I find this, I thought that was a turn that was beyond, just like I thought the COG commander coming out and talking about the UFO file and saying, well, we don't know if it was extraterrestrial, you know. Those things were all planned in advance. So the balloon stuff and all the rest of it, you know, I was just reading more stuff about the Japanese World War II balloons and how they had all these programs against them because they would load these bombs or poison bombs during World War II. So there's no way that we let in any balloons or else, you know, during the Cold War, we would have been toast. So they have all these rules on the books. There's no way they were like, you know, they came out with one of the most ridiculous press conferences in history. You had General Van Herk up there and he comes out and he says, well, you know, we've adjusted our sensors, so we're now going to be able to pick up things like balloons. Don't worry about it. Hey, look, we've adjusted the sensors so we can see UFOs. Look at this. So, you know, this is the weirdness and the absolute stupidity of the things that they're talking about, which anyone, if they had any knowledge of this stuff in the press and the guts to ask it, would just say, one, first of all, you know, you've had NORAD for 60 years. You mean to tell me that you can't detect balloons with NORAD? That's completely absurd. Two, there's all kinds of legal everything for war and all these different conditions, which you can't fly balloons into the United States. You have to have permission or they get rid of them because they had this experience and they had laws on the books since the Japanese World War II experience, where they literally had these bombs go off in places like Oregon on the West Coast and kill people. So, those things happened and we adopted rules against them. So the people who were floating this thing about UFOs and balloons and NORAD not knowing the difference and, you know, they had to adjust their sensors, it was total BS. So why were they lying and why were the lies so stupid and why were they talking about UFOs at all? To me, it's the crisscross and it's a very dangerous crisscross because it has to do with the UFO threat being used to operate a COG emergency. The last question, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Okay, Mintakwe Oyeson, does DJ think Trump still has intelligence allies, naval intelligence or others? And Lady Liberty for you, does Daniel think DJT still has the military with him, the real military equals Space Force?
Well, he's, you know, he's somebody who's always cultivated the military. And, he went to a military academy growing up. I think he does have good connections there. I think he has absolutely dangerous enemies in the intelligence world. And I don't think he has allies in that structure of the CIA and NSA and all the rest of it. I think it's been proven that the FBI and the CIA try to do in his first presidency, his first term. And I think that he uses an intelligence network that he inherited through his work with Nixon, his work with Roy Cohn, and his own kind of street smarts mixed with this incredible political machine. And it's interesting because if you look, Professor Scott identifies the aspect of the deep state that associates with Trump as that group that they used to call American manufacturers, who were all about Fortress America and were very interested in things in America and Central America, but they weren't interested in things overseas. And that also represents part of that clash because the other part of the deep state are international interventionists. Those are the globalists and they're all about global empire and they want to implement the unipolar model. So Trump's support comes from that. Very interesting. That's the whole America First thing. It's still there. And, you know, I do think that the mafia is involved in a sense because the mafia, you can't do things like what Trump has done with casinos, Trump Towers, and all the rest of it without some mafia support in the background. God knows the mafia has been supporting the Democrats. But I do think that there are patriotic elements inside of those structures like American manufacturers the Fortress America people, that I think that there is a mafia aspect involved in there as well, that has a patriotic piece that doesn't like communism, because after all, the mafia had to fight communism in Italy. So there's a weird thing there that takes some drilling down. But I do feel that the CIA aspect is almost unanimously against Trump, as they were against Kennedy. And because they lose so much of their power under Kennedy, he wanted to actually abolish the agency. Think of that. Think of the impact of that when we're talking about what kind of a world would we have gotten, you know, and what was achieved on the other side by their victories in the JFK assassination and 9/11. It is quite a historical question. But in Kennedy's case, he understood, he could not believe when he got into the presidency, he would say to his aides, I can't believe what the CIA is doing without any presidential oversight. What is going on here? And his whole 3 years in the presidency can really be summed up as a battle with the CIA. And then bring in the UFO file, because the UFO file secrecy is the key aspect that ends up putting things over the top for the assassination plan, because those are the things he wants to share. And so we started this conversation with continuity of government, the UFO file, and the SSP, the secret space program. Those three pieces come together and become more important as a combination when we start to look at these things. That is the nature of the scenario. And with that, Miss Olivia, that is the end of our episode in Europe.
I do want to give Scarlet Fire
yes.
The last comment. It says, this is it. Congress allocates billions in military aid to foreign countries, and in return, the military contractors donate millions to congressional political campaigns. This is what we're up against.
Well, that's really true. There's no question about it. And I want to mention this on the Mantell thing. I have a couple of stories about Mantell that I'm going to roll into an episode on the UFO file coming up. And I'll incorporate some of that Farrell information on that, or maybe I'll get him out to do that episode on Mantell, because I think it's powerful. His research on that, also the episode that we just did, Wise Guys in the Hot Zone, contains the kind of hidden little piece about the hot zone that we're going to explode. And we're shooting that whole documentary piece later in September, and we're in the middle of producing a four-part series on Lloyd Berkner in Antarctica. So things are going to get very explosive leading up to the election, and we're going to have a lot there for you. And Miss Olivia, you're up.
Okay. Ilarmanine Bay, Christopher Lombardo, Amarillo Gunrunners, Eurythmy's Fun, Norman Lee Smith Music, Jay Parsons, Just a Girl, Wolfgang McCarthy, Bikini Truther, Song of Prayer, Jonathan McIntosh, Kevin Bauman, Two Beagle Eye, Descat Brock, John Folden, a cult fan.
Hey!
Thomas Ball, RV, Helena Wilcox, Alchemy by Angela, Quantum Paradox, Tommy Ben Gumpel, Robert Scott, Mac Hike 57, Erica Swenson Elliott, Griffin Eagle 7, C.A. Beverforden, Dog Boy, and Debbie McAdoo. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Fantastic. We really appreciate your support. And to all our subscribers, thank you. We couldn't do the work that we do here without you. I'll do a couple of shout outs here before we leave. And it's great having so many of you here in the Ideas Room. Corey Anderson, thank you. Daniel and Olivia. There's some good questions tonight. Bravo, Miss Olivia. That was nicely done.
It's a great, rich chat to go through.
Ivan Langley, Fern Fakes, Don Newway. Don Newway was putting out some very interesting stuff. I couldn't read it because the show was just starting, but wow, I was picking up some of the vibe on it. Quite interesting indeed. Johan Wolf says, I don't think Israel will exist at all in 10 years. Isn't that interesting? It reminds me of the Transcenders and their predictions.
What did they say?
Well, they talked about this immigration crisis, oddly enough, and something along the lines of the fact that the makeup of Israel would be substantially different. Najat Madri, what I learned from this episode is October will be messy. Great work, DJ. The October surprise, indeed. Look, get yourself, get your neighbor, get your friends, vote Trump with Bobby and Vance, put them over the top, because we need to seal the border before the Harris-Waltz team from the New World Order just makes America a complete chaotic mess. I'm telling you, we're so lucky to have Trump and Bobby working together. It's exceptional. I've always been behind Bobby. And, you know, I've had Bobby on this show. I've had great conversations with him. And my own feeling is that he's going to contribute greatly to Trump. And that combination of Camelot with Trump is going to be unstoppable. So this is very important. I have no hesitation recommending them over the opposition. And I think that, you know, some of the whole black pill thing and their aggro against Bobby and all that, just forget about it. You know, I mean, it does not add up. And I certainly, you know, I'm very clear on where I stand. I'm behind Bobby and I'm behind Trump on this 100%. That's where we're going. Great information. Corey Anderson, thank you very much. Les Scott, thank you. Daniel and Olivia Wings Girl, great show and have a fantastic weekend. Wow, great ideas room going on here. Aleister Crowley, what dream was to release the beast from the bottomless pit? No question about it. Jessica Rodriguez, like always, amazing show tonight. Thank you, Jessica. Really great to have you out there. Roosevelt News, great show as usual. DJ and Olivia, thank you. And thank you for being out there. Joseph Tugas, great show, DJ and Miss Olivia. Lovely Miss Olivia. Great show, DJ. Love you all. Alchemy by Angels, by Angela. Is that? It's Angela. Alchemy by Angela. That's what it is. You see, you're just angelic. That's what it is. Awesome show, DJ. Thank you very much, sir. Minikui. Yeah, Amy Thomas, Terry Doherty, Tim Houston. Wow. Of course, we had Dr. Farrell out there. Joseph, it's great to see you. And Ivan Langley, Kent. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. DJ and Olivia, gratitude and ideas from John Power. Wow, great crowd out there tonight. Esther Taylor, Scarlet Fire. Expect good things. Where is that? I'm going to put that up. Expect good things. It matters. Absolutely. And tripping them up at their own game is what we do here. And we do it quite well with your help. We will see you all next week. And remember, it says end broadcast, but after all,
never really ends.
It never really ends. We will be back with you. Have a fantastic weekend and never let it be forgot. Once there was a Camelot, and we can get it again. Trump and Bobby working together. Let's get them over the finish line. This is what we need. We'll see you all next week, everyone.
God bless.
Special reports incoming. Have a great night.